John Heggie. Heggie Walker Law Firm. John, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, John. Thank you.
We were just talking about water polo. Your kid getting into that sport.
Oh, yeah. There's a big tournament up at Maine South for the JV and at Glenbrook South for the varsity today.
Let's add that to the list of sports I could have never played in high school.
No, I hear you.
If you could touch the bottom, I could do it maybe. But treading, well, that's a physical sport.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah, it's very fun. I had a chance last night to go. I was at Downer South, and that's where I went to school. I went last night and took my nephew, who's all of 8, to his very first musical. I was in the musicals. So was that one?
Sandy.
Shocker. Little Shop of Horrors. They did a great job.
It's really classic. Cool.
Shout out to Downers Grove South. What school does your son go to, by the way?
He's at Glenbrook South.
Glenbrook South, GBS, DGS. There you go.
Got two sons there and one at the middle school.
Wonderful. You do estate planning. We've had you on many times in the past, and you love answering listeners' questions, right?
I sure do. Yeah.
Before we get to one, and Jill, hang on the line, Peg, you too, I did want to dive a little bit into this data mining story you had proposed we chat about, which I find interesting, going through public records. What's this all about?
Right. So this has always been something that's available to the public. Court records, LLC filings, even when you change the ownership on a piece of property through the deed, those have always been available to the public and probably should be for, you know, public justice type of reasons. But with the advent of AI and various software tools, what's happening is anything that goes through any of these systems is being examined. Now, not by a human being with eyeballs, but by the software AI type stuff. And they're taking that information, and then in essence, well, they'll do a lot of nefarious things with it. They sell it as lead generation to somebody, marketing type tools, or, scammers can take it and they create fake invoices. They send it to someone like under the color of the law, like it'll say the state of Illinois recording services. Well, that's not really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They'll ask for a specific amount of money, and it's always an odd amount, like $14.88 or, $52. And they just see who's going to pay it.
Now, and they don't, well, what's the cause? They just make something up?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You owe us for XYZ?
So let's say you're going through, you're selling a house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll see that deed. They'll see who sold it, who bought it, what your PIN number was, what the date was, who was your notary. All kinds of public information that really feels personal. Like it's kind of crazy that everyone in the world knows how much you paid for your house.
Right.
But they would. And then they use that debt just to generate an invoice. And you're like, well, geez, I did just sell the house. I mean, this does look official. I mean, it looks really, really good.
Wow.
What they're able to generate. And, whatever return on investment they can get, they can get. But, this is opens up a new can of worms, though, in the probate system. We've always known probate's bad. If we can avoid it, we like to.
And probate, again, just for those that don't know, is?
Right. So the probate's the legal process where a deceased person's property is given over to a living person.
Okay.
So there's different kinds of probate. There's a kind where you have a will, and there's a kind where you don't have a will. And when you don't have a will, this is where it gets real scary. Because all this information gets out there publicly, and, If you were a scammer and you were to know all the people who are about to inherit $20,000, that would be good information. And this is exactly what happens with probate documents.
So someone is, or AI is data mining through public records, which are available for good reason. You may argue against that, but they're all public records.
I agree.
And it's taken and it is aggregating letters or reasons why someone owes money to someone. They use very specific examples that are found in these records.
Right.
And they target people who just look at it and go, well, that looks official.
Right. So, some of it's benign. Like, if there's a house that's going through probate and you submit the paperwork to the court system, just doing the petition alone will generate somebody is taking that data and selling it as a lead generation to realtors. And so whenever we do that, we get phone calls from realtors right away. They're mm-hmm. say, hey, you're looking to sell this house. And, and frankly, most of the time we are looking to sell the house.
Right.
So it's helpful.
Right.
But you can easily see how it could be used for bad reasons.
For sure. You ready to take some questions?
Let's do it.
Let's do one here right off the start. Let's go to Jill. Hey, Jill, you're on WGN. What's your estate planning question?
Hi. I inherited a home through a land trust. Me and my sister did.
Mm-hmm.
And the mortgage is still held into the person's name who we inherited through. And when you go to the bank, nobody understands that you have a trust or how it works. And we were wondering, is there any way you can use the equity in the house to take a loan out for things? We don't know how to do that, and we've been through to a couple attorneys, and everybody's like, oh, we don't know. So nobody understands how do trusts work.
So you inherited a house, and you're looking, yeah. and it was maybe bought for 100, I don't know, I'm just throwing numbers out there. It's worth 300, and there's 100 left on the mortgage, so there's 200 in equity, and you're wondering if you can use that equity.
Yes. With our names are not official, you know, they're not on the mortgage. They're in the trust that we inherited the house, but the bank doesn't understand how that works.
It's a lot of complicated questions. John, are you armed to answer any of those?
So I think there's a couple of facts that are relevant. You know, one is in some states, the mortgage and the deed are almost the same document. In Illinois, they're a different system. Now, the rights of the people who own that mortgage are absolute and concrete on the piece of the property. So the trust may have been the one to take out the mortgage. Was it a land trust or a revocable trust, you know?
A land trust.
Right. So land trusts operate a little differently, but you should be able to access that equity without too much of an issue. In fact, I believe it was a show before us with David Hochberg. He might be the guy to help you out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jill, I'm going to text David your question and maybe get your information down. He might be able to answer the equity question better.
Okay.
Because, John deals with more of the estate planning side of things. Jill, can you hang on the line already? Do you mind just getting down Jill's number?
Sure, thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure. We'll try and get you an answer. Because I know there's some complications, like when you inherit a home, maybe the complications isn't the wrong word. You almost get a benefit in that when you own the home, you don't start whatever it's worth is only worth what it is from when you start owning the home, right, John?
It's a step up in basis. So if, you know, a parent bought a home 30 years ago, whether there's a mortgage or not, and it's worth, 50% more than it was, and you inherit it, after that parent passes away, you inherit it at the current value. You don't owe any taxes on that growth.
Interesting. Then I wondered if the flip side is then you don't get equity in that growth, but I don't really know. In theory, no, wait, if you still have to pay down a mortgage and it's worth a certain amount, you'll get that equity.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes land trusts are just a hair different than like a standard like grantor revocable trust, which we would generally create now for something like that. The land trusts were very popular in the 90s. I don't want to make a controversial statement, but I personally think that land trusts are great tools and they're perfect for land. It may be not the right tool for home ownership.
I've said so many more controversial things on this station, John.
I'm glad to know.
Maybe in the estate planning world, that was real edgy from John Heggie. But boy, I've said a lot worse. I was ready for something else. We're going to get to Peg. We'll get to more of your questions. 312-981-7200. Where can people go for more information, John? How can they reach you guys?
We can always check us out on our website, heggielaw.com. That's H-E-G-G-I-E, law. Or give us a call at 847-272-7360.
Let's say that number one more time, a little slower, my friend.
847-272-7360.
All right, we'll take a break. WGN, it's Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Heggie from Heggie Walkner Law, heggielaw.com, 847-272-7360. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. John, you ready for more calls?
You bet. Let's do it.
Let's get to Peg. Hey, Peg, you're on WGN.
Hi, John and John. We appreciate you letting us ask a question.
Of course. Anytime.
I have a house that I'm getting ready to sell, and it's just taking time. I'm not feeling pressure to hurry, but along the way, we had someone make a comment that, well, if you don't hurry and do it, the tax, you will be taxed on the income from that. And I had previously been told that your first time selling as a senior, that was never a taxable event.
Wait, I'm confused.
I mean, the house is this under the house you $300,000. It's not a big deal.
Is this the house you live in, Peg, or you inherit it, or what is this?
I own the house. I have recently been married, and so I'm now living with the original house that my husband owns. So we're selling the Illinois house.
Okay. I don't know. Is that more, John? Is John does estate planning? Is that more of a real estate question? Probably.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, more definitely of a real estate. But you know, there are some issues like that when you sell a house. If you don't put the capital back into a new house, you know that could be subject to capital gains tax. Normally, if you just buy another house, you can put it into there. But when you own them both outright and they're just sitting there. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, like an income one.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you also
you're fine, Peg. Oh, no, you're fine. No, that's a good question. Tell you what, Peg, can you stay on the line, Iridian? Let's get her phone number down. I'll find someone to get an answer for you, Peg, okay?
Oh, sweet.
All right, for sure. And we're getting a lot of real estate questions, which makes sense after Home Sweet Home Chicago.
Sure.
Estate planning. Maybe we should set this up a little bit better too, John. For those that don't know, estate planning, we're talking wills and trusts and what happens with your estate, which is not necessarily just the land or the house you own, many other things. What happens after you pass, right?
Right. And then, you know, that's where it's important to have a plan, because if you don't have a plan, your things might go where you don't want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of ways to plan. You know, you can designate beneficiaries on all your financial accounts. You can even set up something called a transfer on death instrument in Illinois for your real estate, not to encourage more real estate. But those things will then pass without having to go through the legal system of probate. And that's generally a good idea because probate's expensive. It takes a very long time. And as we kind of touched on, it's very public. And all of that information is going to be available to anyone on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it used to be that it was public, but you had to go down and look in the files. Well, now it's all online, so it's available to anyone. So it's important to have a plan on where you want your things and your money and your real estate to go. And there's a lot of tools that you can do for that to make that happen seamlessly. And there's a lot of tools that you can use to also do that outside of the probate system. And fundamentally, nothing is wrong with going through probate except for those three things. It's expensive, it takes a long time, and it's subject to public record. But your things will go where you want them to go if you have a will.
Right.
But it does have to go through probate to do that versus a few of the other tools, like a trust.
Or trust, right. Avoids it.
Completely, because you give up ownership of your things. It's a little bit of a cake and eat it situation. You don't technically own it, but you have complete access to it. You can use it. You can move things in and out of the trust. You can do whatever you want. You're really not restricted, at least with this kind of trust I'm talking about. And then that would say, and then at the end of your life, well, he didn't own anything. His trust owned it, so no probate's needed.
So just to kind of recap, a trust is avoids probate, probably costs a little bit more on the front end to set up, but you get to kind of set a bunch of parameters around what happens afterwards, kind of a game plan. I got that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. A will is great, but maybe a little limiting. It still goes through probate.
That's right.
But it certainly does outline things better than not having one, and it's a little cheaper to set up on the front end.
Exactly right.
Okay. And then not having a will is the one we're trying to avoid altogether, right?
Right. That's the worst case scenario. That's where you don't get to decide where your things go. The cost is, you know, it's pretty expensive. It takes well over a year in general to go through probate, and you have to have an attorney to do it. You can't represent yourself in the probate court. So I think we all know attorneys, and when you tell attorneys in a long time, that always adds up to a big number.
Meaning like, okay, we're going to – I'm not saying they intentionally slow it down, but it takes time.
It does.
Their time is valuable. You guys know a lot more than we do about this stuff, and there's a reason, and you have to hire a lawyer to do it.
Yeah, it's not a great scenario.
Would you – surmise then that regardless of who's paying ultimately for a trust or paying for a lawyer during probate, do those kind of end up being a wash in terms of the prices, or could you even end up paying more for lawyers? Now, granted, it would be your kids most likely paying for lawyers in probate. Does that cost more than probably a trust in the first place?
It's definitely not a wash. Going through probate costs way more than setting up an estate plan. Now, the more complicated an estate is, the more complicated the setup is, and so it can cost more, but it's almost always going to be less. And then just setting up a basic plan of a basic will, even a revocable trust, you know, you could be looking at something like, you know, 5 or 10-fold savings.
Do you find that sometimes people call you saying, I just want a will, and you're fine, I know you'll help out with that too, and then you just ask them a few questions, and then they realize, wait, a trust might be better for me?
Oh, most of the time, a trust is better for most people. Now, there's some clear-cut exceptions to that, and, you know, if you have a person whose sole assets are their house, their Social Security income, maybe a savings account or an IRA or something like that, they need to set up a plan. Well, you can do a transfer on death instrument, which is cheaper than setting up a trust and deeding your house into the trust, along with just naming beneficiaries for that IRA, and the Social Security will take care of itself. But something as simple as that will probably save, you know, I don't want to get into numbers about
right.
it exactly, because everyone's situation is different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, quite a bit more.
But if someone calls 847-272-7360, maybe they don't have the money for a trust to set up, you'll certainly still walk them through the will process, and you're not going to try and upsell them or say, you have to do this.
Oh, no. There's plenty that you can do. You know, any little step you make pays off later quite a bit.
Right. And maybe someone's in a financial situation, all they can do right now is a will.
Right.
That's cool. And then down the road, they usually again get a trust.
Absolutely.
That's what I like about that. And John, you're such, I'll just say it, John would never say it. He's such a nice guy. Comes from a great family. Really great. Trust John, 847-272-7360. Okay, our phone number, 312-981-7200. We'll get to your calls about estate planning after the news on WGN. John, you ready to take some more questions on estate planning?
Please.
And I appreciate all the callers we've had. Even if they were a little bit more in the real estate world, we'll try and hook you up with the right person to make sure you get the answers that you need. And Kurt, you're going to be second. Let's go to Carolyn here. Carolyn, what is your question?
Well, I basically have two questions, but they're connected.
Okay.
Owned a piece of property as a tenant in common with a relative. No other relatives. She passed away about 6-7 years ago. I talked to an attorney way back then and to see what I should do, and she had nothing else, and they said, don't worry, you don't have to do anything because it vested in you automatically because I'm the only one left
mm-hmm.
as a relative. And now I am thinking of leaving the house to a charity, and I'm looking into whether having it just as a revocable trust or a transfer on death. And I don't know how to transfer into that because the deed still states two names as tenants in common.
Ooh, interesting. John Heckey, go ahead.
And also, from what I've been looking up on trusts, it seems that a charitable trust is a little different from a regular revocable trust, but I don't want anything else. I don't want a charitable trust that, you know, gives money out or donates. I just want to leave the property, the real estate, to a charity, period, as a beneficiary.
Interesting. And that's very noble of you, Carolyn, by the way. Good for you. John, any thoughts on all of that?
So as to the first half on what do you do when you have a joint tenancy of sorts where there's no rights of survivorship, which is very common. Generally, there's just a notification process to the county recorder of deeds. You don't need to file a new deed or anything like that. There's just an affidavit that says, hey, this person passed away. Here's their death certificate, that sort of thing. And then that will clear up the title for you.
Is it okay even a few years later, Carolyn's able to do that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
what county are you in, Carolyn?
Kane
County. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have a specific procedure for that county.
Recorder of deeds.
How to notify the recorder of deeds that a tenant has passed.
Okay. That's part one.
And then as far as part two, you know, obviously I can't give specific legal advice over the radio to someone I've never talked to personally, but, a charitable trust does sound like it would probably be too complicated or not too complicated, more complicated than it needs to be. The TODI or deeding it into your grantor revocable trust, I'm just saying percentages wise, is probably 90% right. You know,
you mean the transfer on death just directly to the
charity? One of those two options is probably the one that's going to fit you best. But obviously, we have to talk about the whole situation, right?
And that you can do with the state of Illinois, right?
Right. In the state of Illinois, you can transfer on death your residence of residence. It has to be residential property. It can't be commercial.
Okay.
Right. Okay. The charity is out of state. That would be no problem.
I don't know.
No. Okay. They'd be the owners. We recognize people in other states. We know they exist.
Okay.
And I would have as much. I could do as much within a TOD as I could in a revocable trust. I mean, I could still sell the property, change my mind, you know, that type of thing.
Generally,
and not leave it to the.
Yeah, generally speaking, John, I know you'd have to look at specifics.
Yeah, generally, trusts give you more flexibility for everything. But, you know, specifically, if you filed a transfer on death on a piece of residential property where you lived, and then you sold it, the transfer on death just goes away.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carolyn, I think John would have to know a few more specifics about your specific case, but you got some general answers.
Yeah, I appreciate so much. Thank you so much. You'd be surprised how many I've talked to and can't answer it. So thank you.
Well, John's an expert on this stuff. Carolyn, I want you to get this number down just in case you need to talk to John further. 847, or about this or about other things. Well, I mean, about estate planning. John will talk to you about anything, I'm sure. But 847-272-7360, okay? We'll give it out a few more times, Carolyn, all right?
Okay, thank you so much.
Right,
thank you.
For sure. I'm glad you mentioned that about the specifics, generals. I think people that listen to the show get it.
Right.
Can't give specific advice, but it's good to remind people this is general advice. They should always follow up with you or
for
another
sure.
professional on this sort of thing. Okay, let's go to Kurt. You're on WGN. What's up, Kurt?
Hi, I was wondering, you're talking about trusts and estate planning. Could you explain the difference between a revocable and irrevocable trust? And also, are one of them better or worse, better than the other in estate planning? And also, are the assets held in a trust like that, are they counted towards the $4 million cap? For Illinois estate tax.
Okay. Hang on, Kurt. I'm going to go through these one at a time. Revocable versus irrevocable, generally speaking?
So, the big difference between those two is when you have a grantor revocable, grantor means you're the person who made that trust, means you can change any part or all of it at any time in your life. An irrevocable trust, you can't change. I mean, that's, you know.
It's set in stone.
It's set in stone. And most grantor revocable trusts, they become irrevocable when you pass away. So your plan, your trustee behind you has to follow your plan. That's how you get to decide the rules on where things go. On the issue of estate value, this is where it gets a little confusing. So like under the eyes of probate, you know, it doesn't matter how much is in your trust. None of it's your property in terms of needing to go through probate. But under the eyes of the state, and of the federal estate tax, since you were so much in control of that money, of whatever was in that trust, you had absolute and complete control of it, it very much does count towards your estate. So
it's not, you don't get to hide it in the trust.
No, you can't. So this is where Kurt's original question about the difference between the trust, revocable and irrevocable, this is where an irrevocable trust can be appropriate sometimes to set one up for your kids or your grandkids or something like that. And while you're alive, you give money into that trust, and then it's gone from you.
You can never touch it again.
Yeah, you can't ever touch it. And as long as you can't touch it, you have no strings on it, then the government doesn't count that towards your estate tax limit.
So for the vast majority of us that probably won't have an estate transfer tax, right? Because it's what, $4 million in the state and
right.
something like 12 as of right now, 12 or 13 million federally, roughly.
Well, a little bit higher. Yeah, that's coming back down, as you said. And it'll probably land somewhere between 5 and 6, although we never know exactly.
Okay, but let's say I am not going to hit one of those things.
Right.
Let's say I'm very likely not going to get to that number. Revocable kind of makes sense because then you can change, you can do it.
Right.
If you are someone that has the benefit or the fortune or you worked really hard, whatever it is, and you are satisfied and just leaving a lot to your kids, avoiding some of that estate tax because right. you're not going to touch it, an irrevocable trust might be the answer for you.
Yeah. And that's a little bit more on the more complicated side of estate planning, but there are tools to help in that scenario for sure. And, we can help you with that if you have that issue.
Kurt, did we get that right?
Yeah, no, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You can leave me some of your money. You can put me in the irrevocable trust, Kurt, if you want.
All right.
Okay. He doesn't sound too convinced. Thanks, Kurt. We're going to get to Mariana, but we're going to take a break first. John, one more time, the number for people?
847-272-7360.
More after this on WGN. All right. How are you doing today, Mariana?
It's Marina.
Oh, Marina. Sorry about that.
That's okay. All right, so I'm 65, my boyfriend is 68, and we're on Social Security, and we had about, together, $12,000 to $15,000 in credit card debt.
Okay.
So I called Legal Aid, and they said,
why pay to go bankrupt when credit cards can't touch your Social Security? So I bought life insurance for both of us just to leave something to the kids, even though they all have money, but just as a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then I 8 policies for my grandchildren, which sounds kind of ghoulish to me, but anyhow, I bought them policies. Now, can the credit cards come after the their inheritance?
What they would get?
Yeah.
Let's ask John. Hey, John.
So, yeah, you know, just in general, life insurance policy where there's a beneficiary named, that's a contract between you, the person who paid for it, and the life insurance company agreeing to pay the beneficiary that you named upon your death. So that all happens by under just simple contract law. So that money will not have anything to do with your estate. I mean, there are some very specific exceptions to that for like really large value policies. But in general, that life insurance company will just pay your beneficiaries. The debts that you might owe outside of that, and to whatever kind of debts they might be, credit cards, or you know, that you still owe the landscaper for fixing up the house, or you know, or whatever it might be,
the state of Illinois for X, Y, or Z.
Right. Those claims come against your estate and whatever else you have. So
all I have is 2 old cars that are paid off that we continually fix, and the mobile home we own, mm-hmm. which is. If you try to sell it, maybe $15,000. So
they may not even go to probate, right, John?
Well, yeah. If you stay under that $100,000 limit for probate, there may not be a formal probate. There still is a small estate affidavit, which is a form of probate. But that would be the place that anyone would make a claim against your estate. And
okay,
I would just
I haven't taken the deed to the DMV yet. So if I add my daughter to it, would that make it fine?
What do you mean, like add her to the deed, like for the car you're talking about?
No, for the mobile home.
Oh, for the mobile home?
Oh, where then you both owned it, and it's kind of like the last caller, then you would lose your right of ownership upon your passing. You know, mobile homes and real estate are a little tricky. I don't want to give you the wrong advice here, and that's a real specific scenario, but okay. I'd be happy to talk to you more about it on Monday.
Yeah, but generally speaking, the credit card companies, they are going to eat perhaps into a value of an estate,
right?
But the life insurance is not considered part of the estate.
No, that won't be a part of the probate estate. That's right. And, you know, people should know, too, if you're named executor of someone's estate and there are more debts than there are assets, you are not responsible for those debts personally. It's just the estate that's responsible.
Okay, thank you very much, Marina. We're going to go 847-272-7360 for any follow-up questions you might have. All right, let's go to Gloria. Hey, Gloria, you're on WGN.
Well, thank you. So thank you for this session. I'm really enjoying it.
Of course, thank you.
My question is, I have a third-party, it's for disability, third-party trust, irrevocable, and I'm thinking of, can I reverse that?
Mm. So that was a trust that was created for your benefit?
No, it's created for my daughter's benefit. She's on disability, but we're struggling with some things with Medicaid. But my understanding is the only reason I need that third-party trust is if she's going to be on Medicaid.
Well, oftentimes those are the purposes of those trusts, where there are assets in the trust, but they're only allowed to be used for, in this case, your daughter's benefit in a very limited way, so that she can still qualify for Medicaid or some other federal or even state program.
Right.
So your ability to change that is probably somewhat limited by the creation of, because it is irrevocable, hence the name. But, you know, your options in terms of like funding that vary, again, you know, pretty hyper-specific here. Happy to look at it and to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I would call Gloria. That's a great question, by the way. Because, yeah, maybe, I guess what you're kind of saying, John, is maybe you can't change the logistics of the trust, but what you're putting into it, you could maybe change to give yourself more flexibility in other ways.
Right. That may be a solution. And the trust may have some sort of, bailout clause. Right,
okay, yeah. Gloria, call John on Monday. John, will
That'd
you take call? Gloria, you mind calling John on Monday? Does that sound good?
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah,
what's the number?
Yeah, for sure. It's 847 272 7360.
All right. Thank you very much.
For sure. Great. That's great, Gloria. Thanks for calling. We got a couple minutes left. We're going to try and get through these. Kathy, you're on WGN. I'm not trying to hurry anyone along, but just trying to get a couple answers here. So sum it up as best you can, Kathy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I'll try to make this really brief. My son is an only child. He was living with his dad, who died unexpectedly, did not put any documents in place, had no will, had no documents regarding the small condo that he owned that they lived in together. And we are having difficulties trying to figure out how to transfer the name or the ownership of the condo, the title, the deed into my son's name when there was nothing done prior to his death. After the fact, the mortgage company seems to be going along with it. The HOA says no. Mm-hmm. It's under $100,000, so there's no probate required. What documents, what vehicles can we use to show that he is indeed the legal heir to that property and going forward to protect him in it? He's also has a disability, so we're working with that as well. So.
Yeah,
we've got a lot on our plate.
A lot on your plate there, but we're going to try and tackle this. John, any initial thoughts?
Right, so this is exactly the worst-case scenario. This is why just doing something, if his father had just made a will or made a transfer on death or anything. So what has to be done is you have to prove heirship. So who all the children were, if there were any other children, all that. It's under $100,000, so you shouldn't have to go through the formal probate. But the complicating factor in there seems to be the homeowners association, which is just it's a separate private contract. Your son very much may end up owning that property but not having a right to live there, just having a right to sell it.
Wow. Because of the rules of
Because of the rules of the HOA.
And he is the only son, so there aren't any other kids involved.
But we have to prove that.
You have to prove that, right. Okay.
Well, we did have an affidavit. It's got a name. I forgot the name of it. Stating and with the and it was notarized and with the death certificate and everything that he is the only child.
Are you in? Is this all taking place in Illinois, Kathy, or is this out of state too?
No, it's Lake County, Illinois.
Okay, you got John's number. Do you got this? Do you got it handy, Kathy? Do you want me to give it to you one more time?
Give it to me one more time.
Of course, and it's all for the benefit of the listeners too. There, Kathy, it's not just you. 847-272-7360. You got that?
I have it.
Call John on Monday or Tuesday, okay?
I will.
Talk
Thank you.
Thank, yeah, very good. Sorry about the passing. We're out of time. Kathleen, stay on the line, though. Maybe John can answer your question personally during the news or at least talk with you because I don't want anyone to not have a question answered. But we're out of time on the air here, John. I mean, this is important stuff, and that was a perfect example of why do something, right?
Yep. Every little bit helps so much.
HeggieLaw.com, HeggieLaw.com, 847-272-7360. John, it was good to see you, and good luck with the water polo. Not you, water polo.
Right.
I'd love to watch me and you do water polo.
That would be worth watching.
We'll take a break. We got news coming up. Good to see you again, John.
Yeah, you too.